is, I think, what these witnesses were so powerfully communicating. If the President of the United States, the most powerful person in the world, can come down like a ton of bricks on an election worker like Andrea Moss and Ruby Freeman, then they can come down on anyone.
And that was Adam Schiff speaking today after the hearings. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, June 21st, 2022. The news produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.
Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion Radio coming up here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on Pacifica Radio Network, brought to you through WBAI New York, hosted by Matthew Kearney and Avery Slank.
Welcome to the rebellion.
Welcome to Extinction Rebellion Radio with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney on WBAI 99.5 FM New York. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate emergency.
Today we are speaking with Derek Seidman, a power researcher and historian who lives in Buffalo, New York. Derek is the research director of the Public Accountability Initiative, also known as Little Sis, which is a nonprofit organization focused on researching and mapping out corporate power to support movements for racial, economic, social, and climate justice. Derek, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Derek, tell us a little bit about the Public Accountability Initiative. What specifically does your organization do, and why is it useful for activists?
Yeah, so PAI, the Public Accountability Initiative, also known as Little Sis, within the movement circles, we're mostly known as Little Sis. We focus on doing power research. That's what our work really centers around. And power research is basically research that helps to identify and map out the corporate power structure. There's really a focus on networks and relationships when doing this research, trying to research and map out the structures and relationships of power through which powerful people, corporations, and the like advance their agenda. This research involves both, you know, sort of traditional research that you might think of, you know, looking, reading news articles, disclosures, lobbying filings, and so on, things like that. But also visual mapping. We have a mapping tool called the Olographer, where our staff, but also our whole community of power researchers, can make visual maps of what power structures look like. And again, really central to all of this is the idea of the existence of a corporate power structure and the importance and strategic importance also for movements and campaigns in researching and identifying what this corporate power structure looks like or what piece of it looks like that you might be interested in or that you might be doing work or activism around. And again, like, I really want to stress this. It's not something that we don't do it just for fun, even though it can be great fun. We do it really to bring transparency and accountability to those who have power and wield that power that affects all of us, but is also to help movements and campaigns in their efforts to win.
So we know what we're up against, in a manner of speaking.
Yeah, and I think it can be really useful in that sense too, because it's not always apparent, you know, what we're up against. I think also the last thing I would say is that power research can be really helpful for finding where your allies might lie in the movement that you didn't even know about. So, you know, for example, maybe you're a group of tenants and you're taking on a slumlord, and that slumlord might actually be a big private equity firm, right? And by, you know, doing the power mapping and sort of going up that food chain and seeing that, you know, the real culprit here is this, you know, Wall Street firm that is the slumlord, right? You might also find out that there's workers across town that are in a battle against a company that's owned by that same private equity firm. And then you can join forces, right? So that's something that can also be really useful.
Can you describe for our listeners what it actually looks like when you produce one of these power maps?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'd encourage listeners to go to our website, littlesis.org, littlesis.org, and you can browse through maps that our Little Sis community has made, and you can also sign up to make your own. But I would say there's not a one size fits all for how it works, but when doing this research, you might take the entity that you're interested in, right? It could be a person, it could be a corporation, it could be an elected official, it could be something like a pipeline project or a power plant, right? And you start to think about certain categories that you want to build out from. Like, so for example, let's say it's a power plant that you're a proposed power plant, a gas or coal power plant or whatever that you're trying to stop. So you might say, ask yourself, move through the categories. So first of all, what's the company that is going to own this, right? And that's proposing it. Who are its executives? Who owns the company? What are the banks that are financing the company, providing it, you know, credit facilities? Thinking about owners, it could be private ownership. It could be sort of, you know, who are the biggest beneficial owners, BlackRock, Vanguard, things like that, right? Who are the lobbyists, right? Are there any revolving door ties or connections to elected officials? Are there sort of philanthropic organizations or you know, front groups, for example, that the power around this power plant might be tied to? And so you'd slowly, you know, do that research, and, you know, it could just be in written form, but you could also, you know, and we would encourage you, you know, to build that out in visual form too. So it starts sort of looking like, it's hard to describe, you know, I think people have called it a spider map. Like a lot of different circles that are all connecting to each other through lines. And, you know, we have tools that you can use to, you know, fancy those up and emphasize certain things that you might want to. So, it's in addition to being strategic and important, I think it is a lot of fun.
Well, it's not only a lot of fun, but the visual, it makes it almost possible in your mind to think about this is how I can start strategizing to address this company. In other words, I can see what I need to do. I can see the path that I need to take by looking at this map, which I think is really important that you call it a map, because it's just, you know, it is laid out that way, and those connections become very clear rather than just reading a piece of paper and saying, this is a CEO and this is who is, you know, doing what, but there you can see the connections. And it's like, okay, this means that I have to construct a strategy that makes sense according to this map rather than just kind of, you know, just on the fly. Well, not even really on the fly, but just kind of reading it and saying, what should we do next? It's very useful, I think.
I think that's a great point. Yeah, I think one of the great benefits of doing this power mapping is that it makes much more accessible, you know, what power looks like, along the lines that you were saying, right? It really can help demystify, you know, what corporate power looks like and the networks of corporate power look like to the point. Sure. Yeah, really anybody can do this mapping and benefit from it. Yeah.
Well, what's interesting too, is then you start to see the small number of people who are actually pulling the levers even more than the people that you don't see. Right. The invisible folks who, you know, they're under the radar screen. They're just kind of doing their job, but their names don't come up except in particular circles. And all of a sudden you see, hey, this person is connected to a wide range of things. Who is she or he? And what does that mean in terms of how we approach our strategy? I think it's fantastic. You know, at Extinction Rebellion Radio, we are obviously focused on the climate crisis. And of course, you know, Extinction Rebellion is a grassroots movement, and we use nonviolent direct action to push for action on the crisis. How might climate activists in particular benefit from power mapping? And can you walk us through a specific example?
Yeah, sure. So that's a great question. Thank you. I think broadly, one of the benefits of power mapping is that it helps you really become more aware of the fact that it isn't just, you know, for example, fossil fuel executives that are driving the climate crisis, right? It's really a whole fossil fuel power structure. sure, you know, you have like the ExxonMobils and the Chevrons and so on, right? But you also have the big banks that are financing them, the JP Morgan Chases and the Wells Fargos and the Bank of Americas and so on. You also have the big asset managers that manage trillions of dollars that are the owners, essentially, of all of these companies, or at least the ones that are, you know, publicly traded, the BlackRocks, the Vanguards, the State Streets, the Fidelities. You have a whole army of lobbyists often that are tied to, you know, that are revolving door lobbyists that have relationships to regulatory entities and to elected officials that corporate power, fossil fuel corporate power uses to gain influence, right? Buys those connections to gain influence through this lobbying. You have campaign finance, right? The big campaign donations. You have, you know, sort of greenwashing philanthropy, right? This fossil fuel industry power structure uses to burnish its reputation and, you know, defend itself from attack. You know, I could go on and on about the different categories, right? Front groups is a really important one. Different consultants and front groups that, you know, this power structure uses to create the appearance of like grassroots popular support when it's really just all paid for, you know, by the companies, right? So I think identifying that and really understanding that the corporate forces that are driving the climate crisis, it really does represent a much bigger and wider power structure, is really important. I also think that, you know, to go back to what I said before about power mapping, helping to find points of leverage, if maybe it is a pipeline or a power plant or a fossil fuel company that you're, you know, taking action against, right? But, you know, it might not make the most sense, for example, to go and, you know, have a protest in front of the corporate headquarters of Exxon or, you know, a big bank that's financing these companies, right? Because, you know, maybe they won't really care. Maybe, you know, you're not really hitting like the real points of vulnerability or power, right? But when you start to power map, you might see, for example, that this company is actually tied to a bunch of, you know, greenwashing philanthropic efforts. The board chair maybe is also the board chair of, you know, the fanciest museum in the city that you live. And they have an annual gala where all the celebrities come and they do not want to be embarrassed there, right? So, you know, these are just different examples of, I think that also, you know, if you find out, you can find out through power mapping that the power that you're focused on might be, you know, connected to certain things that are more open for naming and shaming. So I think there's just like a host of different ways, really, that power mapping helps you find points of leverage that you wouldn't really expect.
You are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on Pacifica Radio Network, brought to you through WBAI New York. This is Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney, and we're speaking about power mapping with Derek Seidman, Research Director of the Public Accountability Initiative, also known as Little Sis.
And now just to your question about like specific examples. So towards the end of 2020, in New York State, where I live, there was a big fight around a new proposed gas plant in Astoria, Queens. It's called the NRG Astoria plant, being built by NRG, one of the most powerful and dirtiest energy companies in the country. This was, you know, a power plant that was facing immense community opposition. There was a whole coalition of groups that were opposing it. It was going to be located around communities that were predominantly poor and working class, people of color. So there were a lot of forces, sort of uniting to oppose this. So kind of in collaboration with some of these groups, we decided to power map the power plant, the proposed power plant. So what we did is, you know, we looked at who owns NRG, and it was the big asset managers. Who are the banks that are financing not just NRG, but this project specifically? And we identified some of those. We looked at the CEO of NRG, but we didn't just look at him, you know, like how much he gets paid and all that. We did more research on him. We really sort of dug into him, and we found out, for example, that he lives in or around Princeton, New Jersey, and he's lauded for having like this very sustainable multi-million dollar house that he built, right? And there was an article in Princeton Magazine about him and his sustainable house, right? So that's a good point of friction you can use, right? Like, you know, the CEO who wants to build really this dirty power plant, you know.
That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. And then also just did a lot of power map around the lobbyists in New York State, how they were tied to Mayor Bill de Blasio, how they were tied to Andrew Cuomo, the governor at the time. And this, you know, was just something, it was useful. Like, you know, organized, it got into the press, elected officials used it that opposed the power plant, activists use it. So it's not like the plant did get shut down. And certainly, you know, this power research did not shut down the plant, right? But it contributed to the effort in the public climate around it, I think. Yeah.
Well, I think it also, what you're saying is it clarifies the kind of strategies you should take. That sometimes that there's ways in which the traditional protests now, I think I'll call them traditional protests. It's been, they're quite predictable in a certain way. That it challenges activists to think a little bit more strategically. And it requires a certain kind of work to do prior to than just organizing a protest, but actually, like you said, identifying points of leverage. Now, could you explain just a little bit, just in case folks don't know what that means? What do you mean by points of leverage?
Well, you know, going up against corporate power, going up against this power structure, they have a lot of resources, a lot of money, a lot of power, right? And I think one of the challenges for organizers to, especially when our numbers, you know, it may not be huge, right? To try to find in this corporate power structure that, you know, has so much power and resources, ways to, you know, find entry points into challenging it, right? So when I talk about those points of vulnerability, it's more like, you know, what is information that you can find, right? That might give you an edge in terms of like where you can apply pressure that might really work, right? Or might have a better chance of working. Or where can you find information that even if you are going against like a very powerful company, right? Maybe you can find a bit of information that will, you know, actually be really interesting to reporters that you can get into the news and help shape the public narrative, or something that will catch the attention of a regulator or an elected official, right?
Some of it, but I'm left wondering how you actually find some of this stuff out. How do you find out which, for instance, which consulting companies the oil companies are hiring, or which law firms they're using? How do you actually go and learn that information, or who's on which board, that sort of thing? I mean, is it always so easy to find? There must be something. Yeah. What do you do?
Yeah. So, it's not always easy to find. Sometimes you have to do a lot of connecting the dots, and sometimes you have to know where to look. In particular, you know, the more experience you get doing this, the more you start to understand like the different kinds of public filings, for example, and tax filings, lobbying filings, things like that. That need to be filed and how to search those, right? And I can give you a couple examples of that. But what I would say is that is stuff that, you know, you can start to learn over time. And a whole lot of power research that you can do, you don't need to be able to do all that stuff. That can be really helpful, and you can find really, you know, good things that can be useful by doing that sort of more advanced power research. But I would really encourage listeners to not be intimidated by this at all. And certainly to, you know, we have a lot of resources. We have something called our Map the Power Guide, littlesys.org/mapthepower. That's sort of a how-to for people to get started doing power research. We do regular trainings. We have a big emphasis on training. So we have, you know, regular trainings for people that are interested in learning how to do power research. You know, if you're interested in that, you can just email me, derek@littlesys.org, and I can plug you in. But, you know, so I really think this is something that just, you know, anybody can start to learn how to do. In terms of the more sort of advanced stuff, you know, for example, what you had said about how do you find out who the consultant firm is. I'll just give you one example. So we were doing some work around the Line 3 pipeline fight, which I'm sure you and your listeners know well.
Yeah, many of I think we've had people on the show who've been involved in protesting against it.
And so we had seen that there was this organization called the Consumer Energy Alliance that was doing a lot of social media and television advertising, defending the Line 3 pipeline, It's been a few years, so my mind's a little fuzzy right now, but I think we had come across them before. And basically, this was an industry front group, right? And, you know, you go to their website and it shows you who their members are. And it's driven by the fossil fuel industry. But, you know, it's a nonprofit organization, so they have to file what's called a Form 990 that nonprofit organizations need to find. And these are publicly available. So we went and looked at the Form 990. And in Form 990s, you have to disclose your big expenses that if you're contracting money out to someone else. And they had millions of dollars that they had contracted out to this Houston-based consulting firm whose name I'm not remembering right now. And so that tells you something right there, right? So you go and you look at, it's in Houston, of course, the fossil fuel capital of the world. But also, you know, we looked at the website of this consulting firm and all of the, you know, staff of the consulting firm were also the same people who were listed on Consumer Energy Alliance's website as the front groups, whatever, like organizers or something.
Uh-huh.
It was all a bunch of BS. It's a clear front group, you know, so we did a lot of mapping and published a few things on that and shared some of this with you know, people who could use this information. So.
So the name Little Sister, can you tell listeners about the significance of that name? I know you say that's the name that activists know, but your Public Accountability Initiative is your sort of official name.
Yeah. So, you know, our nonprofit name is the Public Accountability Initiative, but we run a wiki style database called Little Sis, LITTLESIS. And if you go to littlesis.org, you can use the database. There's hundreds of thousands. I forget the exact number at this point. It might be up to close to 2 million, you know, different relationships of powerful people and entities on the website. And it's sort of like a database that you can use, you know, like you might use Facebook or something like that, but to search profiles of corporate power and things that are tied to corporate power. And it can be really useful, for organizers. And also for researchers and journalists and just people that, you know, are concerned with transparency and accountability.
And it's a name that it's sort of counter to, if I read on your website correctly, that, you know, it's the counter to the Big Brother, right?
Yeah.
That's what I was figuring, the anti-Orwell.
I forgot fantastic. To, yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Yeah. Yeah. So like the, our co-founders, when they came up with that, yeah, that was the idea that it was like sort of the, you know, looking back up at the powers that be, the opposite of Big Brother. Yeah.
You are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on Pacifica Radio Network, brought to you through WBAI New York. This is Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney, and we have been speaking with Derek Seidman of the organization Little Sis about the topic of power mapping. Derek, are there historical precedents for the type of work that Little Sis is doing, building on, innovating from?
Absolutely. And certainly we see ourselves standing on the shoulders, really, of decades of power research and power mapping work that has gone on in our movements. And really, it's gone on for decades. So for one example of, you know, power research throughout social movement history that really inspires us is the SNCC Research Department. You know, for the listeners who don't know, I'm sure most do, but SNCC was the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. It was really an organization made up of mostly young people that grew out of the, you know, the civil rights sit-ins in the early 1960s mm-hmm. To become, you know, one of the most vital organizations of the Southern Civil Rights Movement, really, you know, composed of brave people that were putting their bodies on the line to mm-hmm. dismantle Jim Crow in the most, you know, sort of dangerous areas where it was the most entrenched throughout the South.
That's fantastic. Derek, thank you so much for coming on our show and talking to listeners about this. I think it's going to be really important for climate activists to start really making use of power mapping. And I'm hoping that folks will go right to your org organization and start making use of your services? Could you give them once again your webpage and anything else that they, you know, your email address, anything like that you want to share?
Yeah. So the website is littlesis.org, littlesis.org. If you type that in and also do / map the power, one word, map the power, it'll take you to a resource for getting started on power mapping. And if you want to email me at Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at littlesis.org, I can connect you, I can help you out or connect you to other people on our staff who have different roles in the organization to help you get started doing power research and power mapping.
Derek, thanks for being on the show today. Really, really appreciate it.
Check for Cat Radio Cafe.
The testing.
Testing.
Tune in to Cat Radio Cafe Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The Displaced Playwright. On Tuesday, June 21st at 9 p.m., we'll discuss Garden of Allah, Romy Nordlinger's one-woman show about the great renegade stage and screen star Alla Nazimova, who courted controversy simply by existing.
Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
Cat Radio Cafe.
Hey, my cats drink coffee?
During a seltzer shortage.
Of course.
Join WBAI's Freedom Class on Saturday, June 25th. We are inviting all young people and curious adults to learn more about our government. Learn how your Constitution works. Taught by Gloria J. Brown Marshall, host of Law of the Land and other experts. Freedom Class will be online and simulcast on WBAI. Be part of Freedom Class on June 25th, Saturday at 1 p.m. Freedom Class information is on the WBAI website, WBAI.org. Registration for online participation via Zoom is limited, but you can listen to our Freedom Class broadcast Saturday, June 25th at 1 p.m. Come ready to be empowered, inspired, and informed by WBAI's Freedom Class, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
And the previous program was Extinction Rebellion Radio, heard Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI Evening News. Coming up at 7 p.m. hour will be We Only Want the World with Sansara Taylor. And this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. And once again, during this period of time, I am told by management to say a couple of things in regards to our financial endeavors. And what I'm talking about is this campaign for fulfilling our financial responsibilities in regards to paying the rent for the transmitter that allow us to broadcast in a 90-mile radius. The same transmitter that will allow listeners like yourselves to hear not only within the five boroughs, but a signal that stretches west of eastern Pennsylvania, north, maybe a little below the Catskills, or if you want to go northeast, all the way into Connecticut, Stamford, Connecticut. Well, maybe not Stamford, Connecticut. Maybe a more like Norwalk, Connecticut. And as south as South Jersey, sometimes, given the time of day, you can hear the signal all the way near the Delaware border. But anyway, the reason what I'm talking about is the signal that we have, the transmitter that we have, is pretty powerful. And it costs money in order